other brutal opinions, and a government distaste for him, for the Asians could invent weapons at will now behind their barrier, and a war would be a chancy thing, drove Lorillard back into space. He went at it hard-eyed now, an avowed exploiter. He pretended all the swashbuckle and the dollar-conscious conversation of your true man of greed. But one wonders if he was not hiding a rather large dream. He began to raid exposed Asian points. At least 50 other men like him were beginning to engage themselves in this sport now. And Lorillard became famous, or, as his government said, infamous. They apprehended an Asian war as a result of such raids. The Asians apparently apprehended nothing but Lorillard and his friends. And they rapidly fortified their areas in the outer worlds. But it seems very peculiar, if historians of the period are right, that nothing was actually done to stop this raiding. Lorillard landed and departed within United Continent territory at will. He banked fantastic sums, wet, as the Moscow press screamed, with Asian blood, and went forth for others. He used up several space vessels in the next 15 years, and his losses in personnel were sometimes high. And yet, his recruiting was easy indeed. He maintained, at his own expense, a laboratory in the Andes for research on weapons, battle methods, and, fruitlessly, on cohesion. Two other efforts were made in space to plant colonies, which would act as strong points in rival to the Asians. Both efforts private, and both of them wiped out to a man. And although the United Continents officially shuddered on Earth, diplomatic relations with Asiana were politely maintained. No Asian army dared issue forth from that screen on Earth to attack the superior missiles and arcs of the United Continents, and no missile could penetrate Asia, and the blood continued to flow in space.